Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metal Magdalene with Jet right here on Metal Messiah Radio. Tonight we have with us a very special guest. We have Eric of Watain. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you very much.
Now, Watain is releasing a new album in August, but before we talk about that, Eric, people, of course, have been interested and intrigued by Watain for years. Tell us a little bit about your childhood and growing up in Sweden.
Oh, it's that kind of interview, is it? Well, it was without getting too deep into childhood memories, I would say that one of the things that I think shaped, you know, things the way they later became was the fact that we come from a very special place in Sweden, in a small town called Uppsala, which is one of the oldest cities and one of the last cities actually that came to be Christianized in not only Sweden but actually the whole of Europe. And it might sound like, I don't know, a romantic way of looking at it, but I think knowing so much about our past and having looked back so much these later years, I've come to realize that it actually played an extremely important role in what we came to be later on. And it's quite a calm town. It's full of wisdom, a lot of good old libraries and old places that still holds a lot of, well, interesting and for us very beneficial energies. And that background, you know, it's extremely important to us, and it actually reflects a lot, especially on the Wild Hunt. You know, Uppsala is a place for us that came to be very, very important, not only because it's our hometown, but also because of, you know, what we felt there and what we came to realize was so, you know, important about this place.
And, you know, without going through your whole childhood, I mean, what kind of music did you grow up listening to that played around the house?
Two bands shaped my entire childhood, and I'm talking childhood, say, from being 3 years old until seven or eight. And that was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And those two bands were, you know, I honestly don't think that there was one day between I was 3 and 7 that I did not hear at least, you know, a few songs with one of those bands. And it awoke something in me at a very early age. You know, I saw kind of how much they meant to my parents, I guess. And, you know, I kind of felt allowed to drown in their music. And then, you know, there was nothing really holding me back from, you know, going deep into the songs. And when you're a child, you know, you don't really understand how these kind of processes work. But obviously now, when looking back, I understand that it had a severe impact, really, on you know, at least my interest in music and my understanding of music, because it became something very all-encompassing at a very young age. And later on, when I discovered heavy metal, it was, you know, I started to discover music by myself. It, you know, I already had that kind of very intense and emotional relationship to music, which made my interest in heavy metal, you know, quite severe directly.
So, you know, what drew you then to, you know, Satanism and forming a black metal band? I mean, from listening to the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, which do actually have their darkness to them as well, actually.
Indeed.
You know, so, you know, what drew you to, like, Satanism and forming a black metal band?
Well, I mean, we'd have to jump from when I was 7 and discovered heavy metal to when I was 16 and actually formed the band. And a lot of things happened in those years, you know, but one of the, I guess, important things, very important things that happened was that I became very, very involved in not only death and black metal, but also the ideological fundaments of those movements. And I, you know, always having a quite, you know, very solemn and respectful approach and relation to music in general. When the doors to the black and death metal underground kind of opened up for me, it was very natural for me to dig deeper into, you know, where this whole thing came from, and to, you know, what the energies that I felt when I listened to this music, where they came from. And I found a lot of things while digging, you know. I found things that kind of put outlines and kind of a frame to what so far had been quite abstract ideas about, you know, wild and dark things, if you really want to rationalize and you know, put simple words to it. I found in that subculture, you know, below the surface of that subculture, I found things that very fast became divine to me, and that became, you know, an extremely, extremely big part of my early adolescent years. And ever since then, or let's say at least ever since we formed Batane, I have been exploring the depths of those arts, all of those things, and I have been searching deeper and deeper, and that's, you know, at a very early stage in my youth, so to say, I realized that that was why I was here, you know. And Batane kind of was the vessel that I needed in order to truly dig deep into those things.
And you know, Eric,
yeah, that's a long story short.
When you were saying, like, you know, how you were exploring and digging into all these things, and you know, did this get you in trouble? I mean, did people, like, not understand? Did they think it was more of a rebellious thing?
I don't know if they saw it as a rebellious thing, but, I mean, of course it got me into trouble. I mean, that's when you're walking down into the unknown, and when you're walking into, you know, places that are generally not very recommended to explore, you know, of course it will get you into trouble, and especially when you're a
juvenile
little teenager whose hunger is perhaps a little bit too big for his own good sometimes. I mean, yeah, of course it put me in a lot of, how to say, dubious situation.
Oh, there you go. That's a nice way of putting it. And are you still getting in trouble, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, that when you've chosen a path like this, when you're very open with advocating adversity and opposition,
sure,
then I mean, you cannot expect to live a calm life,
right,
without you know, so to say, trouble around you. I mean, it's a very natural ingredient,
sure,
of having chosen this path and this kind of life.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I mean, that reflects, of course, very, very naturally in Batane as well. I mean, Batane is a band that has always for so many years been surrounded by, I suppose, you know, controversy or you know, taboo, and it's not something that I, you know, like to boast about,
no,
or to revel in for just for the sake of it, but it's, to me, it's just a very natural consequence of being on the side of, you know, being rather than a part of society, rather being an enemy of society, you know, and that's, I don't know, it's, to me, it's just a very natural result of choosing that kind of life.
Now, you know, does Watane identify, you know, with the satanic practices when you play on stage? I mean, is Watane for you more than just a band?
Yes, very much so. I mean, Watane is everything that I know and everything that I am, and it's the last thing that is on my mind before I go to sleep, and the first thing that is on my mind when I wake up in the morning, and it's every tattoo that is covering my body is related to this band, you know. It's my life, and it's very much more than a band, and even so, in a, you know, internally within the band, I think no one, I mean, it was a long time ago that we started stopped viewing this as a, you know, another black metal band or whatever. For us, it's, I mean, at least as much a brotherhood and a communion of people that have chosen to erect a world on their own in order not to be a part of the world of man, really. And yeah, those are big words, but on the other hand, you know, that's, I really cannot put...
Well, it's who you are, you know, I could understand that. And when you guys go on stage, do you incorporate, like, you know, ceremonial things in there too, you know, while you're up there?
Well, I mean, the only thing people have to know is that a Bataan concert is perhaps not, you know, what they're used to in terms of concert experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. some of which are private to the band.
Of course.
And things that people don't really have to know about. But what I can, I mean, from the outside, and what people, how I think people should view a Bataan concert is really, you know, a chance to be a part of a mystical experience, mm-hmm. really. It is a opportunity to actually have a glimpse into something that they might only experience once in their life. You know?
Right.
Because what happens on stage is really a union between high and low, between this world and what lies beyond this world. And you know, if you have the eyes to see that, and if you have a spirit that is receptive for those kind of
mm-hmm.
sights,
mm-hmm.
then a Bataan concert can be very, very rewarding. But with all that being said, it can also be very rewarding for, you know, a regular rock concert visitor who wants to see a wild and severely fucked up live show. I mean, that's also, you know, an aspect of it, of course.
Sure.
But it is a whole lot more than that. It always has been.
And you know, Eric, speaking of the other people that just want to see a fucked up show, do you get a lot of crap from venues limiting you on what you can do in, you know, your ceremonies or shows or whatever? And do you do them anyways?
I mean, like we were speaking about earlier, if you have chosen to represent the backside of reality, and if you have chosen to be a mouthpiece for adversity and opposition, then these are things that you will naturally have to face, of course. We constantly, I cannot say how many hundred times we have been standing in front of frustrated, angry, shit-scared promoters who haven't had the slightest clue of what they had brought across their doorstep with Bataan.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something, that is one of the few things that I can really say that I appreciate about achieving a form of success, because
mm-hmm.
One of the things that actually allows is a bit more, how to say, fluency in you know, or it allows for a bit more, you know, professional way of doing things. And although I think we would never be a band that you know are like widely welcomed at every venue in the world, at least the ones that we choose to work with now are, you know, a bit more understanding towards what we're trying to do, and perhaps they at least can, you know, respect it and appreciate it for what it is, even if it's only for them about, you know, getting a lot of people coming to their venues. But I don't know. To me, it's something that always been quite disturbing. You know,
mm-hmm.
these kind of promoters that are just scared because they are humans, and we bring something inhuman in
mm-hmm.
their venues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that's kind of tiring, and then kind of, to me, very respectless. You know, I mean, we consider our work holy. I mean, we are on a pilgrimage,
mm-hmm.
and we don't like when people stand in our way. It often ends up in really, really bad situations. So I look forward to the forthcoming tours that are hopefully going to be a bit more permeated by a certain understanding, and perhaps at least, you know, that people are expecting what we are doing in their venues.
Right. Well, I think a lot of it is ignorance too. You know what I'm saying? I would assume, you know.
It's one of the basic qualities of the human being is ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
How the human race have been able to last for so long.
Right.
Because of a blindness and because of a arrogant mm-hmm. form of you know, not having a clue about anything. And, it's obviously not something that I favor a lot. You know.
Well, for me, I mean, what would piss me off even more is, like, protesters and stuff like that. Do you get a lot of protesters?
Yeah, you know, that's another thing, though, because I welcome our enemies at all times.
Uh-huh.
I like to meet our enemies. unfortunately, most of our enemies and most of those protesters, as you call them, are, you know, they represent pacifism and they represent a peaceful approach to handling your enemy, so to say.
Mm.
We don't, and that is why we see all too little of them. You know, I mean, I welcome people to come with torches and knives and try to kill us at the concerts. I think that would be beautiful if they did it in the name of their god. You know,
mm-hmm,
but
sure.
They don't because
no.
They are shy.
Mm-hmm.
They are shy and scared little sheep who like
yep.
to, you know, gossip and sit and drink tea and be afraid instead. But with all that being said, you know, if they're very much welcome to come. They can protest their guts out. You know, that would be I welcome that a lot. I think it's better that people, you know, it I mean, I appreciate them. That's a sign of being taken seriously, and I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of taken seriously, do you think, like, the music industry takes black metal as serious as they do their other metal?
I mean, an industry taking something seriously is kind of an oxymoron, I guess. I mean, it does not really work that way, I suppose.
No, but, I think that they're probably scared too.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, it's not something that concerns me very much
mm-hmm.
at all, because I usually look upon it, you know, like if I've not taken this example before, but I think it's a good one, that say that there's a tribe in somewhere in the jungles of Amazonas, for example, an old shaman tribe that had their traditions and they have their beliefs and they are very defined and very, very, well, concrete in their convictions, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine that National Geographic, for example, would like to do a documentary about them
mm-hmm.
that they play on, I don't know, VH1 or whatever the TV channels are called nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Would that change anything to that tribe? No, it wouldn't really. I mean,
mm-hmm.
people would get more interested, perhaps, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully people would also respect it, you know, but that's not something that you can take for granted. But still, you know, however the outside world chooses to look upon Matane, or however the music industry looks upon Matane, doesn't really alter in any way who we are and what
right.
we're here to do, you know, no matter how much they would like to. I mean, no matter how much people would like to just take the so to say, fascinating and admiring aspects of Matane and clean out all the backwardness and the very dark and disturbing things that are the heart of this band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much people want to do that, that will never be possible, you know. It will never be possible to do that because it's embedded so deep in our hearts. And what they can try as they might,
mm-hmm.
but it's just not going to happen.
Okay, Eric. Let's talk about the new album now. The Wild Hunt. The Wild Hunt. Now, why did you choose this particular name for the album, and what is this album all about for you guys?
Wow, that's a very big question.
It's a two-hour show. Go ahead.
But I mean, the title is a title that's been with us for many years, actually. It was a title that I think we came up with even before Lawless Darkness, and it was, you know, I always liked the combination of two simple words that, in combination with each other, makes for, you know, an entire universe, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you can elaborate so much around this title. I think, for me personally, it is very much a way of looking back on the past 15 years of this band and seeing it from a, rather than like a biographical perspective, perhaps more of a godlike or a religious perspective, really. You know, it's the journey of Watain taken into a divine context. It becomes a kind of myth almost. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's always hard to put words on these things because it makes everything sound so much smaller than it is. You know, to me, The Wild Hunt is a vast concept of divinity and of pilgrimage and of strife and of sorrow and of loss and of triumph. So it holds so much for me and as a concept, and that is also why I think the album is a very, how to say, huge and dynamic, mm-hmm. and explosive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, yeah, it's because it consists of a extremely large variety of you know, strong emotions.
And I was going to say, too, this album definitely has a lot of different aspects to it than your previous works. You know, why did you choose to do this one so differently?
I don't know. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it seems like, you know, you have the clean vocals on this one, and, you know, some of the rhythms are a little bit different in this one, and it's kind of, I mean, this is just my opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of more rockish, almost, and, you know, you did, you know, I can't even think of it right now, but to me, as you guys as a band, it sounds more mature. You know, I don't know if this makes sense to you, but it sounds like you've matured as a band to come to this point. And not that you were afraid to try anything on other ones, but it's like you ventured out a little more and stretched a little more, and you have different elements in there, and it does have a different sound. And even like some of the drum beats and some of the stuff are so different to me. But I like it personally. But, you know, it doesn't go 100% with, like, some of your older stuff. You know, that's just my personal idea. I mean, when you guys were making this album, when you went into doing this, did you plan on, like, you know, let's do this a little different, or let's do this a little different, or let's just keep with the same Watain formula?
Well, it was very much the same Watain formulas,
mm-hmm.
that we were working with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always been a matter of opening yourself completely,
right,
and allowing for the things that reside within us,
mm-hmm.
to actually speak instead of us as, you know, individual persons,
right,
and that is very much what happened on this album as well. But you have to realize that, I mean, we formed this band when we were 16 years old.
Sure.
So if anyone is surprised that we now sound different than we did when we were 16, that was,
you are different,
15 years ago, then, well, it's, you know, to me, it's like it's a little bit strange to be surprised by that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one should rather somehow expect that if one is, you know, has a grasp on music, but a lot of people, like, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, people expect this and people expect that, and
right.
If you're an artist, you have to neglect those expectations.
Sure.
Entirely. You,
mm-hmm.
know? You cannot spend one single second contemplating on whether or not what you're doing right in this moment of, you know, divine intervention when a song is being written. You cannot seriously think that at the same time we would be, you know, debating whether or not this would match people's expectations.
Right, right.
It's not about that, you know. It's about translating things that are so far beyond, you know, most branch.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with whether or not we sound like we did before. It has nothing to do with, you know, a music genre. It has nothing to do with
right.
any of these mundane things that people keep referring to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, music and art in general must go beyond such terms. And it must be written with an approach that has, you know, that has severed all the bonds with,
mm-hmm.
you know, with whatever, yeah, expectations or, you know, whatever there might be outside of your own world. I mean, it's entirely irrelevant, I think. You have to be in a vacuum. You have to be entirely open to whatever comes out.
Right. And would you say that this album is more personal than previous works, or...?
I think, well, I mean, we have always aimed to be very, so to say, personal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Vatain is, first
right.
and foremost. It's a direct reflection of what goes on inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer you do something, of course, the more skillful you get. And
mm-hmm.
with that in mind, I suppose you could say that we have come closer to you know, being even more open and even more, you know, being able to create a very direct translation of ourselves and you know, the oceans of turmoil, really, that are ever present within us.
You did a remake of the G.G. Allin song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck Off, We Murder, which personally I enjoy hearing bands do stuff like this. So what compelled you to do this?
It was such a natural decision for us. I mean, that G.G. Allin has been a very central figure in our lives for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, has played a very big role, I think, in you know, shaping our outlook on well, at least music, you know, and what you can do with it in terms of conviction and you know, a real outsider,
mm-hmm.
and a real, you know, really taking a stand against the natural order of things, so to say. Because it is, to me, quite, you know, but people. Although he's still considered a legend in many,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some subcultures, he should be a saint. You know, he should be someone that everyone in rock and roll culture refers to. And making a G.G. cover was kind of, you know, a simple attempt on taking a step in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, Eric, thank you for taking the time to do this. And I'm going to let you go do the other interviews. And again, I really, really appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you.
Okay, yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.